today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Brought to you by The Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub at the corner of 12th and 12th Southwest, where you can win a trip to see the Seahawks versus the 49ers with a pigskin club.
Well, the big story of the day, the Calgary Flames signing their first round pick from the draft in Philadelphia this past June. As, hey, look, they got it done. Sam Bennett, fourth overall. It's the highest the Flames have ever drafted a player since moving to Calgary from Atlanta. The young man put up some fantastic numbers in Kingston in a couple of seasons last year. 91 points in his draft year in 57 games. Very excited to be here. We had a chance to talk to him early on and very, over the moon that he finally put his name on an NHL contract.
I'm so excited. You know, this is a moment that every kid dreams about, and you know, for that to come true today, it really is surreal.
Not a difficult thing. I know that there were some players that had been taken after him that had already signed, and Sam Bennett hadn't signed, and the odd text would come in going, should we read something into this? Should we be worried? Why haven't they signed him? I don't think this was ever an issue, at least according to Mr. Bennett, was never an issue for him.
Pretty basic. The entry-level contracts aren't too difficult, so I let my agent handle most of the negotiating, and it went pretty smoothly, and I'm happy that we got it done with so quickly.
The tension, I suppose, comes from, the 2009 first-round pick and Tim Erickson, demanding his way out. And since then, I think Jay Feaster come out and say, well, that's never going to happen again. And they signed, I think they offered Sven Berchi his contract the night they drafted him.
Yeah.
So
and Sean Monahan, there's the same thing last. Sean Monahan didn't sign his, I want to say, till August last year. I want to say it was later in the summer when they finally got him.
Yeah, I mean, again, Erickson was different because he was the European player. You rarely saw him. He came up for a couple of development camps and that type of thing.
And it was public that he wanted.
Well, it was public at the end that he wanted out. Yeah, absolutely. And he forced his way to New York. What was so priceless about that whole situation was, at the time, Craig Conroy and Jay Feaster were very upfront. Look, the player's concerned that, if he doesn't make the Flames, he wants to go back to Sweden, that he's worried that we won't call him up. We've made assurances and everything. We won't trade him, all those types of things. So he ends up, he wants to go to the Rangers where his dad, Jan, played. He gets there. They assign him to Hartford.
Yeah.
So he goes down to the American Hockey League, and then they trade him. So, he's in Columbus, and I'm assuming at some point he's going to graduate to being a full-time NHLer. But
saw some time last year.
Yeah, but Flames will take Tyler Watherspoon. They will take Marcus Granlund. They will even have Roman Horak for a while, so it wasn't a bad deal.
Part of the Ladislav Smetra.
Right,
so,
exactly.
I mean, Jay Feaster did very, very well for when kind of having his hands tied at the last minute there to make a trade he didn't have a whole lot of time to build up a trade, but he did very well.
But in this case, I think it was a slam dunk. We all knew it.
Yeah, fourth overall pick is a little bit different than a Tim Erickson.
We should also point out that
Jake Virtanen. I was going to say.
Jake Virtanen of the Columbus Blue Jackets, of the Calgary Hitmen, signing with the Vancouver Canucks today.
His entry-level deal done. He was the sixth overall pick.
Yep.
So.
Jumped. Yeah.
You think he jumped?
He jumped only from the standpoint of where his rankings were. He was in that 10 slot right around there.
Yeah,
a couple that had him a little higher.
Yeah,
exactly, on both sides.
But being a BC guy, I think Vancouver saw the opportunity to take him. And
well, and the other, it used to be about a decade ago, if a player got hurt going into a draft or was hurt, his stock would fall because we don't have medicine. How will we ever get him healthy again? I don't think teams fall for that anymore.
No, they didn't. And Vancouver got a very good player in Jake Virtanen, and he's still hurt, and he's not going to, he will go to the Vancouver camp, but he won't participate at all in it. He won't participate in the World Junior camp because of the injury. But what he's done so far, what they've seen, he's pretty well a lock to make the World Juniors. He is going to be back, start with the Hitmen next year. So, I mean, good news for Calgary is we know he won't be in Vancouver because he won't have a camp there next year.
No. He'll be there eventually.
He will be there eventually. I guarantee you that.
And they signed McCann, too, yesterday, didn't
they? McCann, yes.
Yeah,
he was their other first-round pick.
So Vancouver taking care of. But I think it was Julius Honka or whatever, one of the mid-round picks that signed a week ago or whatever, and everybody, whoa, okay, he signed. What about our guys now? I don't, Ekblad signed, I believe.
Yeah, Ekblad's done.
Draisaitl?
I haven't heard about Draisaitl.
Reinhardt did.
Reinhardt did as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty standard stuff, especially with the new CBA and stuff. It's very rare that you'll see, especially a top 10 draft pick, maybe not signed. So pretty standard stuff. Nothing to really sweat about when it doesn't happen right off the hop.
So the Calgary Flames do end up signing Sam Bennett. No surprise to anybody. It is our big story of the day, brought to you by the Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub at the corner of 12th and 12th Southwest. We go down the subway fresh take hotline, and I don't even want to call him a guest. I should call him a co-host, because he's appearing on the program quite a bit. Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. Congratulations. You got the first guy, or the first round pick under contract today. I doubt this was a very difficult deal, was it?
No, and thanks for having me on, Robin. This is sort of becoming a routine thing now.
It is.
No, as I said early on, I know I was asked the question at development camp, is there an urgency? And there really was no urgency to get him signed, obviously. Yeah. You know, what we think of Sam, we were going to get him signed. It's just a matter of when. And we had a couple conversations. I had a conversation with his representatives over the last week. And we got a deal and it got done. And I think the biggest thing is it now is behind him, and he's still got some time here before camp. When I talked to Sam the other day, to really focus and eliminate all the other distractions and get ready for training camp and putting his best foot forward.
You know, you and I had the conversation yesterday when we were talking about Yoni Ortiz, about development, and you made the point that everybody's a little bit different. Your expectations for Sam Bennett at his first National Hockey League camp?
Well, you know, really, I'm always hesitant to talk about that, because, you know, obviously the player is excited to come to camp. And if you ask Sam, and you probably have talked to him, I know he was on with you guys earlier, you know, Sam's got one goal in mind, and that's to make the hockey club. And that's great. And that's what we love about Sam. Training camp, preseason, that'll all determine where Sam is. My expectation, he's going to come in. He's going to be a player that's hungry. He's going to be a player that's, there's going to be a lot of want and will. But where he goes in October, in my mind, I'm of the belief that Sam will be back playing junior. But that's up to the player. If he proves to us that he's ready and he's capable, and that not only can he be in the NHL, but it's going to serve the right purpose, then that's something we're going to look at. So, my expectations for Sam right now is just, you know, that he's going to be a player that's going to come in and be a hungry player, and we'll see where we get to in training camp.
That's really fair to the player, though, isn't it? And that's got to be part of it. You don't want to set unreasonable expectations or anything like that. And then if the other, I guess the flip side of that is you might ignite something too, right?
Yeah, well, I think the initial reaction, and I understand coming into this, you know, coming into this job here, and I understand it completely in terms of the everybody around the team. We want these players to have success, and obviously we the people around the organization saw what happened with Sean Monahan. But you know, it's important to realize that the Sean Monahans of the world are the exception, not the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to be well known and very, very clear that we are not going to just push people in to the league because they were drafted a certain spot or you know, just for any other reason. Then they need to be ready. They need to be ready to play. They need to be ready in the league, because you can do so much harm putting people into the league before they're ready. Him going and playing junior, or players going back, as we talked about with Ordeal, and spending more time in the minors, those things can only benefit them. You need to be ready when you're getting into the league. So, as I told Sam, there's no expectation. That's not to say that, you know, we want him to do well and we expect him to put the work in and be prepared when he comes to training camp. But there's no pressure in terms of having to jam him into the lineup in October. And his play, his where he's at, those all, and as I say with all the players, they, you know, too many times people think the coach or the manager dictates who's going to be on the team. The players decide who's going to be on the team and at what time and so on and so forth. So his play and his readiness will determine where he's going to be.
Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames, our guest. Big story of the day is Sam Bennett signing his entry-level contract. Your thoughts, and I know, I'm sure you're positive about it, but he goes to a World Junior camp. Your thoughts on the World Junior experience for a young man like him?
I think it's just it's a great experience. You know, it's funny though, Rob. I mean, the one thing I say that you know, collectively we do in this business. If you look at those top players, especially in their draft year, it's such a busy time for them. You look back and a lot of them, you know, going back to last August, and a lot of players participate in the Ivan Hlinka, and then, you know, they're getting into their junior camps, and then they got the junior season, and, you know, prospect game, and, you know, World Junior, and then you get into the combine. So in Sam's case, you know, that all ends sort of with the draft, and a week later he's at our development camp, and, you know, in the beginning of August he's at the World Junior. So, you know, it's always a difficult year, that first year or that draft year, for those players, but I think it's just an absolutely wonderful experience to go through. I think it's if it works out, and we've got a lot of time between now and December that Sam's part of that team, I think you can only benefit from the experience. You're playing against the very best in your peer group, the stage, and then obviously this year with the tournament being in Canada and all the things that go along with that, I think it's just a great development tool, as well as being just a great tournament. I think it's a wonderful development tool for these young men.
So, Brad, you watch this guy all season long, and then you get a chance to talk to him and test him in Toronto before the draft. You draft him. You bring him to prospect camp. Tell me about prospect camp. Did you learn something about Sam Bennett? Did you find something out by kind of having him in your backyard?
Well, it's interesting. It's a good question, because I think, you know, as you go through that process, obviously you're watching the player, you're evaluating the player, you're spending time throughout the year with the player to get to know them. You go through the, you know, sort of the combine experience. We actually brought Sam to Calgary for, the combine experience is sort of a real snapshot. You get 15 minutes with these guys. We brought a number of guys in, Sam being one that we really wanted to spend a full day with. The development camp experience, it's the first time with your player. You know, it's, you know, the rest of it, you're sort of digging for information. It's sort of like all of a sudden now it's your child, and, you know, you get to have, you know, start that relationship with him. So I don't know if there's anything different. I think more than anything, he validated a lot of our beliefs in him. This is just a driven young man. You know, he's a guy that his sole focus is to be in Calgary. He's a guy that he doesn't take no for an answer very well, which is a great thing. And I loved his ability to take in information, you know, and there's a lot of information in those development camps, everything from nutrition to, you know, the off-ice training and all that. He was a sponge, and, you know, and Sam, it's all about how, you know, it's all about winning with Sam. And that's, you know, ultimately when we went through the process of, you know, evaluating these players, and you watch them on the ice and you're evaluating the skill set, a big part of, you know, what we want to build here is the character piece and the people that will take personal responsibility for wins and losses. And that's Sam Bennett to a T. This guy's, you know, it's about wins, it's about winning a championship, it's about team success, and everybody talks about it. That's part of this kid's DNA. So that's, you know, when you get a chance to sit down now over the course of a week with him here, you know, to me it just validated our belief in the kid.
One more on Sam, and that was, you know, we often ask the question, you come to a pro camp, you know, what do you got to do to get ready for the next level? I was curious what he thought he was doing good at that camp, and he said it was his compete level, his battle, and he said being in the right place, right time. Did you see the same things? Do you think that was some of his strengths in your camp?
Yeah, and you know, Rob, it's always I said it at the time of the camp, I don't want to say I don't put a lot of stock into the on-ice stuff.
Yeah.
You do, you know, you're picking out just a little bit of sort of the skill level and being able to do certain things and a little bit of the instincts for me. But there's such a variety of the kids that, you know, either been on the ice or been off the ice or all that sort of stuff, and it's summer hockey. But what I really took from him is he plays at a high tempo. Mm-hmm. Like he's one of those few. There's a lot of guys that can play with speed, but or can do things, play fast, but not actually execute fast. He can execute it at high pace. But there's that, you know, whether it's a game or a scrimmage in the middle of July or if it's a game in January, when the lights go on, this guy just competes. And you could see that at our camp. You know, all of a sudden there's a puck battle, and you know, he's not really looking at the calendar to say it's July 7th. He wants to win the puck. And you know, to me, those are things that it's just, you either have that or you don't have that. And you know, that to me, if I took anything out of the development camp, obviously, you know, he's got tremendous skill. He can skate, he can think the game. But it's that internal will that, you know, again, stood out for me.
Brad Treliving, our guest, general manager of the Calgary Flames. Traditionally, it's you know, the first rounder is the guy that gets done. Is there any timetable or any priority to get the rest of your draft picks signed?
I wouldn't say priority. I mean, we're looking at certain things. I would predict right now that you know, we specifically from the draft perspective and the recent draft, that we may just sit tight and allow them to get into the year and continue to watch and monitor. But you know, those things can always change. But nothing is on the horizon at this point.
Just a couple more. One business question. One of my contemporaries did a better job of interviewing yesterday than I did. I forgot to ask you about a couple of your players. Jonas Hiller, I understand that he had, I believe, the appendicitis, was it? Or?
Yeah, and appendicitis. He was working at camp in Switzerland, and all of a sudden had a pain, went in, and he had an appendicitis. And they were able to do the procedure arthroscopically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, another one of these medical wonders that I didn't know about. And so really the timetable, they said anywhere from 9 to 12 days. So just in speaking with Jonas and his representative, you know, that was last week. He, you know, by next week he feels he's going to be back to normal, up and doing all the normal things that he'd be doing. And, you know, we're not expecting any type of delays or any type of impact in terms of his readiness for camp.
And the rest of your players, we know Emile Poirier's going to be a while yet, but everybody else healthy?
Everybody's progressing. I mean, it was interesting coming in here, and when I started talking and getting reports of, you know, the second day on the job, and we had a number of guys that either were just going for surgery or had surgery. So the good news is they're all progressing. Tyler Witherspoon, who had a significant procedure on his shoulder, is progressing. Same with Poirier. We will, you know, both of them actually were seen recently. Everything has been positive. There's been no setbacks, and quite to the contrary, they're actually ahead of schedule. But, you know, as we get closer to camp, they'll be seen again mid to the third week of August. And we'll, you know, I don't expect either of them at this time to be full participants in camp, but, you know, we'll have a better read as we get closer to camp.
And Seeloff's going to be good to go?
Yeah, touch wood. Patty's made progress. He took a shot there in development camp, but, you know, we all kind of said, uh-oh. But, no, he's worked hard. He's worked extremely hard, this kid, to get back to health, and, you know, all systems go at this point.
Well, Brad, again, I appreciate you coming on for the second day in a row. And we also catch you. If you guys aren't working in your offices, you're going around the country talking to groups. I mean, we had Berkey up in Innisfail talking to the Eagles, and I understand you're out in B.C. and you're going to make a presentation tonight.
Yeah, we're up at the B.C. Hockey Hall of Fame here today. So we just got into Penticton, and so we're all over the place, Rob. You can't keep tough to hit a moving target, we say, so we try to keep moving here a little bit.
So what do you do on stage? Are you a comedy guy? You come with the jokes and the stories?
Well, it's certainly not the looks. I know that part. So it's, I don't know. They're honoring a number of the recipients tonight for inducting them to BC Hockey Hall of Fame, and then one of them is I believe it's the 02, 03, or 03, 04 Memorial Cup champion, Kelowna Rocket.
Okay.
So we'll do a presentation with them, it's a good night, and we're back to Calgary in the morning.
Well, as always, I appreciate the time, and I look forward to our conversation on Monday.
You bet. Sounds good, Rob.
Thanks, Brad.
Good weekend.
You too. Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. Sam Bennett has signed his entry-level contract. That is the big story, brought to you by Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub at the corner of 12th and 12th Southwest, where you can win a trip to see the Seahawks versus the 49ers with the Pigskin Club. When we come back, some headlines for you. And later on in this hour, finally, just finally, we're going to take a couple of minutes to ourselves And talk about that football game last night, because it's been great guns a-blazing, yep. My friend. And I know you've been wrong on a bunch of things, so we'll correct that. That's coming up later, but headlines are next. By the way, you're going to be in Canmore on Tuesday morning.
I am.
Part of the morning show. The morning zoo around here. It is the, and I have to say this, very excited. This might be the single best event we do. The Hockey Alberta Foundation Charity Golf Classic at Stewart Creek in Canmore. Now, the funds raised go towards the Every Kid, Every Community. And as well, you can find out more information at hockeyalberta.ca. I'm biased because I'm on the
board. Yeah, I was going to say.
But that's how I feel.
Still
I'm going to get
good
you
event. Some, still a
I'm
good
gonna,
event.
I'm going to get you some guests.
That's what we want.
We're going to work some magic. Just like Will Nault. I'm going to be a little version of Will Nault out in Canmore on Tuesday.
There you go.
There he is. I was waiting for him to creep out from Oh, he's going to crack
You only
it
want
now.
To do that for one day.
What? That's all I could do it is for one day. That's it.
Whoa.
No, I just said... I could only follow in your footsteps for one day. I can't do what
That's
you
That's a little high praise. I enjoy that.
I can't do what you do.
Thank you, Rob.
I mean, I think I've made that abundantly clear.
And I can't do what you do.
Aim high, pal. Aim high. Take a break when we come back. Headlines next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960. Talking sports all the time. No radio? No problem. Download the Rogers Radio app and never be without Sportsnet 960 again. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We do the research, filter out the crap, add some opinion, and fire it up for you on the drive home. Headlines start now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Gloriously busy day here on the old Sportsnet 960, The Fan. As we dive into headlines, I know we've talked about it, we've had some guests on it, but really haven't spent as much time as I would have loved to on this game. Calgary Stampeders over the Edmonton Eskimos 26-22. Rob Kerr, Josh Humphreys with you. Let's do this. Let's hear some audio. It was rundown day today for the Stampeders. We'll first hear from John Huffnagel. He's 4-0, but he's far from fat and sassy.
I'm pleased that we were able to go up and win a tough game. It was a very physical game. The turnovers and our special teams play and our sound defense really had a lot to decide the outcome of the game. So it was a good win. Lots of room for improvement.
Yep.
Can't disagree.
Lots of room for improvement. I mean, look, talking to a lot of people, there's no doubt. Can't bury our head in the sand. 15 penalties, 135 yards. The Eskimos took 12 penalties, 105 yards. With everything we've talked about with, around this game, I do find myself now watching the CFL, and as soon as the play's over, looking at the bug to see if the yellow flag symbol's coming up.
Flag happy league. It's been that way for a long time.
Well, I would contend it's a little more so this year. The penalties are up about 6 per game more right now. And we talked to Glenn Johnson, the director of officiating, earlier on this week, and he outlined it. Look, the competition committee came up with these things, and we're going to enforce them.
Mm-hmm.
And until players and coaches figure it out, I think and that may take Labor Day.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of penalties. I mean, it's been known as a league that has lots of penalties for a long time. It's almost, what's the joke? It's always been throw it to the end zone and just have a guy run to the end zone. You'll draw pass interference. You'll get the ball in the one.
Right.
It's kind of been this. We saw it a lot yesterday. The Eskimos got that same sort of call in their favor.
Sure.
Pass interference in the end zone. They get the ball in the one. It's been that way for a long time. But again, it's not only just flags. There's some work to do between the Stampeders. Like you mentioned, there's teams that got to do some things. There's... not only the pass interference, but there's a lot of different penalties. Stampeders had a too many men on the field call or too many men in the huddle late in the game that could have proven to be pretty costly, and they got away with it. So there's definitely still some work to do, but 5 weeks into the season for the Stampeders, 4 weeks into the season.
4-0.
You still got lots of things to work. Lots of room for improvement, as Huffnagel says.
Yeah, but injuries continuing to be a role, just playing a huge role right now for the Stampeders. And more today, at least updates from the head coach, another concussion for a running back.
He suffered a concussion. He seems to be fine, or doing well. So we'll see. He'll go through the protocol and see when he gets back on the field.
So that's Matt Walter, who left the game early.
Yep.
He was replacing John Cornish, who's on the 6-game list with a concussion. What that did was kind of a trickle-down effect that forced them to play Jock Sanders at running back. That brought Nick Lewis out of the game because of the Canadian ratio. That ended a streak, and we'll get to that in a second. But again, there, you know, one of the amazing things about the Calgary Stampeders is their depth.
Oh, always find a way to bounce back, whether it's the quarterback position like it was last year, or this year it's the running back position. Yep. Receivers, I mean, the receiver position has always been one for the Stampeders that they struggle with injuries, but they find ways. Everybody steps up, whether it's the guys on the defense stepping up to take the pressure off the offense, whether it's the special team stepping up. It's always seemed to have somebody stepping up to help out.
Well, they're going to need some help as well on the offensive line as John Huffnagel updates us on Craighead and Jones.
We have two sprained ankles with Brett Jones and Brandon Craighead, and we'll see how it develops over the week.
What that did was insert Pierre Laviolette into the center position.
Held his own.
I was going to say, you know, the first overall pick in the draft, they were able to make the trade with Ottawa, acquire that pick. They take Laviolette. I'm not sure that Laviolette was the sexiest pick in the draft. He might not be the best player in the draft, but the belief was he was CFL ready. He could come in. And I know at training camp, there was kind of that, we're happy, not quite what we thought in terms of his readiness. But as you say, he went in, he didn't make any mistakes snapping the ball, it appeared anyway, and he held his own. I think that's a great way to put it, against a very tough interior line of the Eskimos.
Yeah, very sack-happy interior line was the Edmonton Eskimos had coming in, and they protected Bo Levi. They gave Bo Levi time when they needed to. The Eskimos didn't really get a whole lot of pressure to the quarterback, at least very much in that game. They've got pressure on him, but didn't get to him, and Laviolette did a pretty good job for getting thrown into your first real action midway through a pretty important game against a pretty good defense.
Bo Levi Mitchell, 14 of 29 last night in Edmonton, 124 yards through the air. One touchdown, two games in a row, which I think some on the outside have, well, they're lucky. They scored 10 against Hamilton at home. This is a game in which they really made the Eskimos, you know, pay for turnovers and that type of thing. So the offense under the gun, but Bo Levi Mitchell, not that worried about it right now.
I wouldn't say bad. I mean, yeah, there were some things out there that were frustrating us, but, we got to win. That's the most important thing. Last week we had to lean on our defense. This week we lean on our special teams. You know, those guys played outstanding on every facet out there. It was fun to watch.
He's also quick, and you know, it's a good point that both of you guys made, Will and you, Josh, that this is a guy that is not going to use a lot of eyes and me. This is about we. And also a guy that does not look for excuses like injuries when it comes to performance of his offensive unit.
Honestly, it's not attributed to the injuries or anything like that. It's just that the last two games we played, like I said, they're just going to try and take away our pass game. You know, once Cornish went out, I guess teams aren't respecting the run game. But, Jock still had 85 yards rushing. So, we're fine with that. We'll lean on that if we have to. But obviously we still want to pass. It's a passing league. Like you said, when guys are doing that, we got to find ways to, move the ball and get wins.
One thing, and we talked about injuries and Bo Levi Mitchell saying that, it's not impacting the offense. Well, it is to a certain extent because Nick Lewis comes out of that game when Matt Walter goes. Jock Sanders now in the backfield. You have to make some ratio changes. Nick Lewis is 166 consecutive games with at least a catch. That streak ended. Nick Lewis talking to the media today, and he was asked point blank about the streak.
What my choice? That's my reaction. All I can ask for, I worked hard to get back to play this game at a high level. And all I can ask for is opportunities. And if I don't get opportunities, then I can't do things. So, therefore, all the thing I can do is continue to work. And maybe it'll happen one day. So it's hard to deal with. I can't lie. I've always prided myself on consistency from the 1,000-yard seasons to being available and making myself the best teammate I can be on game day, whether I'm catching the ball or blocking. And when that's not happening, just hard, But it's things in life you go through, and you just continue to push your head forward and keep moving. This is not the end-all, be-all, but at the same time, it just shows you we all struggle at some point in life. Mine just happened later in my career. But at the same time, I'm not really worried about it. I'll keep working, and see what happens.
Your response to that?
I like it.
You're okay?
He's a competitive guy, wants to help, wants to be part of this team, wants the ball. I like it. He still believes he's got something left in the tank that he can help this organization, help this team, and he talked about it there, whether it's making catches, whether it's blocking downfield, doing different things. He can help this team out, and I like that. I'd rather have him come out and say that he still has that competitive drive and that fire in him than come out and admit that, you know, maybe his time's up, maybe he has to accept a different role on this team. He's not ready to do that. He still believes he can help. I like it.
You know, I'm a little bit biased because I've known Nick for a long time, and mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed the numerous times that he has come in studio. It's one thing to talk to a guy down in the field. It's a different thing to bring him in here and have an hour with him.
Yeah.
And I know the Nick Lewis who was young and brash, you might say immature. You know, he came into the league and, you know, he just wanted to be everything. And I believe that I have seen Nick Lewis mature into a leader. I think he's a really thoughtful guy. I think he's a real opinionated guy. I don't think he's necessarily a cliche machine. I don't think he ever has. I know he rubs people the wrong way. I grant you that. But I'm willing to cut him some slack. I quite honestly. Now, the other thing he said is, look, you know, I'm upset, but this is about me talking to Dave Dickinson.
I'm about to go have a conversation with him right now. We're about to have a conversation, you know, but as a player, all you can do is work, you know, and you just hope they're honest with you. You know, if they feel that I can't do it, at least let me know. And I'll continue to work and get back to that point, you know, but, I mean, I'm still in the starting lineup every week, so I guess I'm doing something right, and I guess I'm in the right direction. So, you know, that's just the only thing for me right now is just I want to help this team win. And I've always told you, if I don't want to be just another player on the field. If I'm just another player, I don't want to play. I'm a bad sport in that aspect. I've never been just a player from the time I first stepped on the soccer field, from the time I played basketball for the first time and everything else. I've always been a go-to guy. I've always loved the pressure of being that second down and in the games and things like that. And it's hard for me to sit there and watch. And it's hard for me to know that I can help and not have the opportunity. So, like I said, I'll just continue to work. You know, continue to support the guys in the locker room. You know, I'm not going to have a pity party. You know, that was one of the hardest things is coming home and seeing all the tweets, you know, people begging for me to get a catch. And I damn sure wouldn't have wanted to come out there the last play of the game or last minute of the game just to get a catch because then the streak ended the same to me anyway. So, hey, I'm a workman, and that's what I do. So I'm not going to have a pity party. All I can do is work and just try to communicate the best way possible. And continue to do what I need to do.
Interesting thing there about I didn't want a ball toss to be at the end of the game just to continue the streak.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Again, he's a competitor.
Yep.
He's got the fire in him. He's got the desire you talked about there. He's a bad sport in the way that if he can't be part of the, you know, a contributing factor, he doesn't want to play. But I don't hate that at all about Nick Lewis. I don't think anyone should hate that about that. Just some kind of guys you need on your team to win. You need to have those guys that have that fire and want to be the absolute best. Nick Lewis wants to be the MVP every time he's on the field. And is that really a bad thing? I don't think so.
John Cornish spoke to the media today as well, first time since he was placed on the six-game list. And, of course, you don't get cliches when it comes to John Cornish. And he made it quite clear that being 100% healthy before he returns to the field is his priority.
I sort of thought that me rushing back was not an ideal thing. You know, my head's been fine. But, you know, I have other issues sort of going on related to the concussion that, you know, I'm trying to make sure are, you know, all good before I rush back. And for me, you know, maybe I'm on the sixth game for three games. Maybe it's six. It doesn't really matter. For now, my priority is just getting all good.
You got to stay in the decision?
I approached them with the decision.
Which, again, the Heath Brown question from CFCN right at the end. Did you? Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
you don't hear that very often.
No, you don't hear a player, and it's the day we live in with all the stuff we're starting to know about with concussions now. Maybe you start seeing a lot of players say, you know what? Yeah, I'd love to get back in there and help out in all the glory.
Yeah,
but glory ain't gonna last forever, and I still got to think of my life after football. And John Cornish is a brilliant guy. He's a smart guy. We know that about him. He's a smart guy to know well enough that if he's not ready to go or he needs to heal up a little bit more before he gets back on the field to help him out not even just this season and beyond, and then even beyond his football career, John Cornish is going to get himself healthy before he gets back out there.
One more on John Cornish, and that is, you know, ever since that injury happened in the first week against Montreal, it's been kind of, was he at practice? Is he isn't? And I think he makes a good point. He kind of wanted to get away from that, you know, day-to-day drama.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I didn't – that was one – like, I want to play. I mean, I'm a football player. I want to play football. But at the same time, I think it's best for me personally if I don't have a near-time horizon, I have a far-time horizon, so I can just worry about the things that I have to do before I can play rather than worrying about playing.
So there you go. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about that game last night. Scott Fisher from the Calgary Sun is going to join us just after 5 o'clock, and he was in Edmonton, so we'll pick his brain. A couple other headline items. I know it was predominantly, you know, post-game for the Stampeders, but the Flames did sign Sam Bennett today, their first-round pick, three-year entry-level contract. He's excited. We talked to Brad Treliving, the general manager. He's excited. And also want to point out that the Calgary Hitmen's Jake Virtanen has signed his entry-level contract with the Vancouver Canucks. They picked him 6th overall.
Yeah, both good signings. You knew they were going to come eventually. As you see, when you're that high of a pick, you're going to get signed eventually. I know there was some concern about people that it was taking a little while, but good to see them both get done in due time.
All right, when we come back, we'll dive into what was a fun game from a certain perspective last night in Edmonton at Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Covering the world's fastest game. Home for the Calgary Flames and the National Hockey League. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Again, we're trying to score on every play. Every play, we got it. We're not a concede type team, so we're trying to find ways to score on every single play. Understand, we're going out there to try to win the game on every play.
That's Chris Jones, head coach of the Edmonton Eskimos, asked a direct, pointed question. Why the punt fake at the end of the first half? Backed up against your own goal line. Nobody saw it coming. Nobody thought it would happen. You know, we can talk and complain about it. We'll get into that in a second. But Mr. McDougal of the Stampeders kind of changed the complexion of that conversation. Because if he doesn't make that tackle on Grimes and Grimes gets that first down, I'm not saying they're going to score. But to me, the long-term implication of this, what that would have done for the Edmonton Eskimos, I think is huge. I'm Rob Kerr. He is Josh Humphreys. A little free time for us, as we like to say. You know, back in the kindergarten days, we got nothing. Now we can have some fun.
There we go.
26-22 is the final. The Calgary Stampeders over the Edmonton Eskimos. The Stampeders ended up going into the half leading 20-13 because the Eskimos tried the gimmick play. We talked all week about the Battle of Alberta. We talked all week about how the CFL needed a little pumping up, that needed something to talk about. 26-22, it was not the offensive juggernaut. This wasn't exchanging long bombs and big running plays and things like this. There was a lot of warts in this game in terms of the play. The weather didn't help and all those things. But what I love about it is it gave us this gift. It gave us this moment. Yeah. It gave us this because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to sports, you know, we love the accolades, we love the great plays, but let's be perfectly honest. What's written about, what's talked about, what's tweeted about, what do you talk about at the water cooler? The debatable issues.
Yeah.
That's it. That's what we love, right? I go to the 7HL this morning. We're 6:30 in the morning. There's a bunch of grown men screaming at each other about, you know, fake punts and whether you should do it and everything. That's what people talk about.
Yeah.
And everybody, I think most people look at it, was it conventional? No. Was it the right play? I don't know.
It's easy to sit here now and say, no, it wasn't the right play because it didn't work.
Right.
But if it worked, then it was the right play.
But I said this before. This was right out of Madden.
Yeah.
We've all done this in Madden. Yeah. We've all played Madden, and we've all, well, I don't
we've
care.
We've all been 4th and 28 and just Hail Mary.
Yeah, what the hell? Why not? It's a video game. And every once in a while, I would say, one every year, maybe two, or maybe one every 2 years, something happens that defies all of the conventions. We all turn into instant analysts. We all turn into instant coach. And we go, oh, that was stupid. And you didn't like the play, right?
I just didn't see the point to it, so I didn't like it. There was really, it was just a high risk, low reward.
Do you buy Chris Jones?
No, I don't really, to be honest.
You don't buy that.
Well, I understand. Okay, you're trying to score on every play. Yes, I understand that. You're trying to win the game. But to me, this is just a very high risk,
right?
Very low reward. What are you betting? Like, beside the fact that I know you guys talked about it.
High reward.
Because you want to know that you believe in your team. Absolutely. And all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. And I get that.
High reward. Now.
For long term, but.
Let me ask you this. Do you have the cojones to run that play? I do not. I do not.
No. At that point in time, no, I'm playing it safe.
No, I'm just saying, like, no, if I'm in, you know, it takes a lot of gumption to go and make that call. You know, I talked about it, and I think it's worth revisiting. I loved it because it reminded me of such a great thing that happened here in Calgary. Back in 2003, Jim Barker's first year as head coach of the Stampeders, they're playing the defending Grey Cup champion, the Alouettes, first game of the season. Somehow, everybody picked the Stamps to be terrible, and they wouldn't, and, you know, they didn't have a great year. But right at the beginning, they were right there with the Grey Cup champs. They go to overtime. I want to say it this way, that the Alouettes kicked the field goal.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And then the Stampeders marched down, and they had third and goal. And Jim Barker went for it.
And this was the CFL and the shootout kind of.
This was before the new one, right? Yeah. And Jim Barker went for it. And I was there. And you could hear the gasps in the building. It was like, really? And then everybody, yeah, we're into it. And Montreal stuffed them. Montreal wins. Everybody's all over Jim Barker, including, to me, arguably, the greatest sports talk host the city's ever seen, Joe Sports, who, and I really want to tell this right, it was 30 feet over in a different studio, and I'm telling you, the grin on that man's face when he got on at 1 o'clock, the Joe and Kevin show, and he went after him. He loved it. And he was, you know, all over, and you can't do this, and Joe never, ever changed. Like, he had Jim Barker, and I to this day, credit Jim Barker, and I think that's where our friendship began, is he came on, and he sat in there, and he took everything, Joe. And Joe, right up to the day he passed, Jim and Joe always argued about that. Mm-hmm. In jest. They enjoyed each other. It was a kind of a joke between the two of them. But to me, I remember Jim Barker on the phone giving this impassioned look. We are what we are. Everybody has their doubts. Everybody says we're this. And if we pull that off, those guys, even if we didn't pull it off, there's a value in it because those guys, coach believes in us. Yeah, he thinks we can do this.
The coach knows.
Right.
They know that the coach believes in them. Yeah.
Whether or not you should do it, I secede. As a practical, should you have done it?
This
no,
is a 4-0 team
it.
Already. This team already knows they're good. Their defense.
Yeah, but
no. I mean,
Don't give me. I think they know
that Chris Jones believes in them.
Don't give me 4-0. They had lost 8 in a row to the Calgary Stampeders. They had lost 7 in a row at home. They had won all of 3 of the previous 15 home games before this season. They're carrying around a dead man's chest. They're carrying around the weight of all of that crap from before. He closed practices.
Yeah.
Who closes? It's the freaking CFL. You don't close practices. You do. Look, dude didn't even shake Huff's hand at the end.
And there's a lot of people, even on our text line today, that are very upset saying Chris Jones was just full of himself. His own ego got in the way. That's why he made the play. There's arguments coming from that. I personally don't believe that at all.
What I'm saying to you is that I get it. I understand it. That's a decision he made. It all works into the same thing. Look, these guys don't like each other.
No.
Chris Jones and John Hofnagel, I'm sorry, I might be speaking out of turn here, but it's quite clear that there's not a lot of love lost when Jones just up and went to Toronto. End of story. They close the practices, the Stampeders don't close the practices, and then at the worst possible, the last thing on earth, listen to Chris Cuthbert when he called that game on TSN. He couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Could not believe it. And it nearly worked.
And it nearly,
right? Now, they lose the game. They give up the touchdown. I take all of that in stride. I understand it, accept it. But I don't think this is Chris Jones being full of himself. This is Chris Jones trying to exercise some demons. We've got to get used to the fact that, as far as the rest of the league is concerned, the red and white class of the league.
Yep.
Don't you think?
I believe that, yes.
I believe the rest of the league looks that way.
And I think the rest of the league does too, yes.
They probably have the same misgivings that we do about November. Mm-hmm. But during a regular season, you can't take, you know, you go back to when John Huffnagel was hired as the head coach in 2008. No team has won more games on the road than the Calgary Stampeders.
Yep.
They're a good test.
They are.
And I think Chris Jones, this was all about beating the guy he worked for. I think this was all about exercising a monkey.
Did that get in front of him too much? I want to beat John Huffnagel so bad that
we lost the game. He lost the game. So, yes.
Do you think maybe, but making that play, the fake punt, do you think some of it had to do with, I really want to stick it to John Huff? I want to beat him that bad that I really want to take, you know, make this play. That's where I'm coming from. If that's what his mentality was, even just a little bit, then that's so wrong.
I think
because that's almost putting yourself in front of the team.
Yeah, and you know what? This is one, I've argued myself into a corner here. I remember Ed Hervey, the general manager. I remember Riley, quarterback, all of these guys talking about how they let the fans down up there.
Yeah.
Commonwealth Stadium. They beat the Ottawa Redblacks. They beat the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Nobody's beating their chest over that.
Yeah.
Here comes an undefeated Calgary Stampeders team.
Their first big test.
Right. And I think they threw everything at the wall. Let's get after it. Let's get unconventional. Mm-hmm. Let's get crazy. Now, there's two, at least a couple more games to go here.
Yep. Two more Labor Day games.
Are you not, if you're the Calgary Stampeders, are you not, is somebody spying, watching, thinking, you know, we don't know what this SOB will do.
Yeah.
He's already shown us he's unconventional.
And even the Keenan McDougal interview with him, he said, you know, it was the most bizarre thing on that play because they were so casual on the defense that the ball was snapped, and they were just still waiting for the punt.
They weren't they?
They were just waiting, and then he said, once we finally saw the Eskimos blockers do a little bit, some different things than they normally do, then it kind of clued in that, holy moly, they're going to try to run a fake on us here.
I don't pretend to be inside Chris Jones's head. I'm just saying I've seen this before. I know what one coach told me. Chris Jones did not back away from it, did not go away from it. He will get vilified in Edmonton over it. He'll get vilified around
the
league.
The shows, talk shows up there right now.
But you know what, Josh? Good on him.
Mm-hmm.
Gives us something. We're not talking about the Argonauts laying people off. We're not talking about crappy football. It wasn't great football.
No. I mean, and it gives us something good to talk about. And farther to that, remember in the fourth quarter, they have a second in inches, and Mike Riley drops down to shotgun when the Stamps sacked him there.
Yeah.
With under a minute to go or under 2 minutes to go in the fourth. That's another one of those.
See, I was going to correct you because you said, was I was driving him to work today, you said that John Huffnagel outcoached.
I think, he was outsmarted, I guess. I should have, and you're right. It wasn't much as outcoaching, but I think the moves that John Huffnagel made in this game, the decision making, a lot better than the Edmonton.
He didn't have to take risks.
He didn't have to because he was winning.
That's right.
But that play, to give the safety. I didn't see that coming. And again, I'm sure there's a lot of football people out there who are like, yeah, well, of course he was going to do that. But for me, I kind of was like, what's he doing? And then you kind of look at it and you say, well, what a great play.
Yeah.
Run some time off the clock. You're still up by six. They need a touchdown regardless. You're only going with the two.
I mean, you can make a legitimate case to your point that he outcoached him because of that move right there.
Mm-hmm.
Great one to kill time. You have the confidence. You have the confidence that they'll get the ball now deep. You don't have to worry about a run back.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about anything like that. Now you just have to play some pressure defense. I'm not defending Chris Jones. I certainly accept the premise that he got outcoached, but I don't think this was all willy-nilly. I think there was something bigger at work. It didn't happen. But inside that locker room today, what are the Eskimo players? Who are the Eskimo players? Are they looking around? Are they going, it's your fault? Are they looking around going, you know, coach has taken one here for us?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's really talking about the Eskimos today.
No.
They're talking about Chris Jones. They're not talking about the Eskimos. You know,
they
had a hard time handling Charleston Hughes and that defense in the second half.
And maybe long-term, it was the right play by Chris Jones because long-term, it's helping out his team. It's going to benefit him. Short-term,
maybe.
Like today,
maybe.
And we don't know yet.
Look, Barker did it for a reason. That team was terrible. So I don't know if at the end of the day, I understand the premise. I get it. I'd love to encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need more of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
it at the very least, it sets up for, we wanted to set him up for a good Labor Day game.
And oh, yeah,
now
yeah,
we've
yeah,
got
yeah.
So, now we've
oh,
got a storyline, yeah, yeah, we've got yeah, a sidebar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
we needed any more, but we've got one already.
And you know
here
what?
Here we are a month away from it. We've already got one.
And here, you know what? Jones has got to own it.
Yeah.
Because the lead up, the build up, TSN's going to want to talk about that. Everybody coming to the McMahon Stadium to talk to the Eskimos the day before, they're going to want to talk about that. His own guys are going to want to talk about it. That will be one of the moments that comes out of that game. We're not talking as much as we should be about the athleticism of Jeff Fuller. We're not talking about Bo Levi Mitchell through some wonky passes there mm-hmm. that they were fortunate. We're not talking as much as we should be about Mark Killam's special teams unit because they were fantastic.
Yeah.
But we got something fun out of it.
We did.
And that's never a bad thing in sports.
No, and it said we talked about it all week. We want yep. something to come from this game to distract away from the negatives in the CFL, and we have something to talk about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Josh, have yourself a great weekend. We will
Thank
see
you.
You
too.
We'll see you on Tuesday morning. You're going to the morning zoo.
Mornings for the next 2 weeks.
That'll be awesome. You'll love every minute of it.
I always do.
We'll take a break when we come back. In the 5 o'clock hour, jam-packed full of sporty goodness. And I can't think of a better guy to talk to than Scott Fisher from the Calgary Sun, who was at that game up at Edmonton. We'll find out if he won the 50-50, and we'll get his thoughts. Again, he may make a far more compelling argument than I did about Chris Jones being silly, but you never know. Also, we'll hear from Sam Bennett, Flames' first pick in the draft in Philadelphia this past June, 4th overall, the highest pick the Flames have ever had. He signed his entry-level contract. And one of the heroes from last night. One of the heroes for the Calgary Stampeders is going to join us, Keenan McDougal, as well. It's a busy 5 o'clock hour. Oh, by the way, I should point this out. This little program here, it doesn't happen without the Comedy Cave. Hey, it's cool inside the Comedy Cave. Cool people, cool deals. Bring in 8 or more friends, stag sports team, or night out and get half-price admission all summer long. Visit thecomedycave.com. Scott Fisher, next, here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.